Well, good afternoon. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Appamado amatapadam, pamado machuno padam, appamatta namiyanti, ye pamatta yathamata. Thank you all for inviting me today to give a talk on the occasion of the 3 months death anniversary. Or commemoration, remembrance, memorial. I don't even have a name for the person. This isn't someone I knew, unfortunately. Death is takes, of course, special significance in Buddhism. It's not more significant than in other religions, but it means something different, something somewhat unique. In Buddhism, there are 3 kinds of death. There's what we call kanika marana, the death at every moment. At every moment, we're born and die. Because what we are is made up of experiences. Who are you right now? You're nothing more than what you experience. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, thinking. That's who you are. Your emotions, your likes and dislikes, your feelings, your thoughts, all of these are born and die every moment. That's very real. This you don't have to believe me. It's quite obvious. The second type of death is called samatti marana. It means death is a concept. So this is when you say this person died or that person died. Or you look and you see someone is dead. It's something you can only experience externally. It's a concept. The truth is that person didn't die. The truth is their mind continues on, their experiences continue on. We don't have any proof that they died. We don't have any evidence that something changed except externally. We can't tell what happened to their mind. But we see that their body stopped moving, so what we know of them has ceased. So we say they died. Third type of death, and this one is somewhat uniquely Buddhist, is called samuccheda marana, and this one is real as well. The true death, that which actually dies eventually, if you practice Buddhism, is the defilements, the impurities in your mind. This is what we're looking to kill, what we wish would die. Our addictions, our aversions, our jealousies, our insecurities, our neuroses, all of these things. So that's called cutting off, when you cut off. So that this is with Nibbana, you know, this Buddhist concept of Nibbana or Nirvana. That's real death. But it's not death of a person or death of a being, it's the death of the impurities of the mind. When the mind becomes perfectly pure and peaceful, that's what that means. So today we come together to commemorate the second type of death, which is actually only a concept. Buddhists, we have lots of excuses to to do good deeds. We come together on birthdays, right? We come together on the Buddha's birthday. We come together on the New Year. And we come together on death, the death anniversary. It's a good reason to get together and to listen to the Dhamma and to do good things. In this case, doing good things on behalf of the person who passed away. So it's a good thing. What we should never do as Buddhists is wallow in grievance, you know. We shouldn't get caught up in grieving for this person. It's kind of senseless. It doesn't help us, it doesn't help them. And it belies the fact that we don't really understand the Buddha's teaching or the truth, really. I mean, is it a surprise to you that this person has moved on? Everyone in this room will be dead soon. Some of us sooner than others. This is part of life, it's part of our journey. Now in Buddhism, this isn't a reason to grieve. It's a reason to go beyond death. And so we have this verse of the Buddha, which many of you, I think, know. I heard some of you actually chanting it. It's a very popular one. And it's quite curious because it says that those who are pamada are what? They're dead. And those who are appamada never die. Appamata namiyanti, they don't die. But those who are pamada, they're as if already dead. So it describes and defines the word death in a new way. Nothing to do with this body. Nothing to do with time. Death is not a moment. Death is a state of mind. Is your mind dead? Are you a zombie is basically what the Buddha is saying. Most of us go through life as zombies, dead, not alive. Even though we're moving, even though we're talking and eating, the Buddha said this is like dead, like a dead person. So do you know the story that this verse came from? Does anyone recognize, make the connection? What was this? When did the Buddha tell this verse? Where's the scholars? Who knows? Who has heard this verse before? And tell me where it comes from. It's a very famous story. Sunday school kids here. There's a very famous, because there's a quandary. Who is dead? Who is alive? Do you know this question? The Buddha asked, or the monks asked the Buddha, who is dead and who is alive? It's the story of two very famous Buddhist women. Do you know these two women? Huh? Did you say Patachara? No, no. That's a hit, swing and a miss. Huh? Kisa Gotami? No. Two women. They have a story and their karma is entwined. Well, one of them, she was born to a rich man. But their family fell upon hard times. There was a plague. And so they had to flee to go to another city. They had nothing. But they had a friend in another city, a rich friend. And so they traveled and great hardship they made it, but they had no food along the way, they had nothing. And so when they got there, they were half starved. And so their daughter, she went to the other rich man's house to see if she could get some food for her parents. She said, "You wait here, I'll go and see." And so she went and she found that there was this almshouse set up. And so she asked for three portions. And the man looked at her and said, "Okay," and he gave her three portions. And she brought the three portions back and They had the father eat first. It was an Indian thing, you know, you put the man first. And so he ate, but he ate too quickly, or it was just too much for him, and he died. He couldn't stomach the food, and he died of indigestion. They were all quite ill. And the mother and the daughter, they grieved terribly because this man, their husband, the father, had passed away. And the next morning, the girl went to the almshouse again, and this time only asked for two portions. They looked at her again, okay, so they gave her two portions. She went back and she had her mother eat first, and again her mother passed away. Her mother wasn't able to stomach the food, or else she was just so far gone that she wasn't able to take it. And she got sick and died. And suffice to say, this young girl was quite distraught. But with nothing left to do, she went back to the almshouse again, and this time only asked for one portion. And one of the men standing there became incensed and told her to get lost, he said. And he said, he said, Dara, I think, which means get out. And she was taken back, and he said, you know, yeah, you come all greedy asking for three portions, and then you realize, what am I doing with three portions? Then you ask for two, and finally today you realize how greedy you've been. We can't take greedy people here. And with tears coming down out of her, you know, tears streaming down her face, she told him the story of her parents passing away the past 2 days. And this man was, of course, moved by her story, and he said, I'm sorry, I apologize. And he took her in. Does any of this sound familiar? Some of it must sound familiar. It's a very long story. I'm giving you the very, very abbreviated, very, very small portion of this long story. I've cut somewhere in the middle to tell you about this young girl. Now, she was a clever young girl. And so she lived with this man. This man took her in as his daughter. He was running he wasn't the rich man, but he was running this almshouse for the rich man. And there was a problem that it was very loud, you know, because the people would come in and they'd all just run to the front to try to get the food, and whoever got first, they'd jostle with each other to get the food. And she said, well, why don't you build a fence? Why don't you build a little fence so that people have to come in one by one? And she told this to her adopted father, and he said, well, that's a good idea. And so they built the little fence. And after that day, there was no sound. Her name was Sama. Her name was Sama, and she built a wall, Wati. So they gave her the name Samavati. Samavati. That's where she got her name, if you didn't know that. Because her name was Sama, and she built Wati, a wall. And so they called her Samavati. Can you guess who the other woman is? Who is the woman involved with Samavati? Well, there were two, actually. We got a story of another woman in there. It's a long story with lots of people. So, Samavati. Anyway, the story goes, she eventually, because there was no more sound, the rich man, Gosaka Siddhi, right? He liked the noise because it made him think, oh, there's all these people coming to get alms. So he asked, why is there no more noise? Are you not giving out food? Oh, yes, we are, but my daughter, she's very clever. She had us build a wall. And he said, I didn't know you had a daughter. And he explained, and when he found out that this was the daughter of a very good friend of his, he adopted her himself. So she became the daughter of a rich man and eventually became queen. The king saw her one day and saw how beautiful she was and made her queen. This king, Udena, I think, he had three queens, right? One of them we're not going to worry about, she's not really important. But the other one is quite important for this story and for this verse. So the story of this other girl, she was born daughter of a Brahmin family. And she was very beautiful as well. So beautiful that her father refused anyone who wanted to marry this girl. He would say no, they refused. Because she was too perfect to him. And then finally, he was walking in the forest one day, and he saw this ascetic, sadhu or rishi, whatever you call it, with a shaved head, or, well, short hair anyway, sitting calm and serene and very beautiful as well. And he came up to him and he bowed down and he looked and he said, "This is the man to marry my daughter." And he said, "Venerable sir, I've been waiting to find a man so perfect as yourself. You are perfect for my daughter. I'm going to bring my daughter and offer her to you. When you see her, you will be taken by her beauty, and certainly I have found the right match for my daughter." Do you know who the ascetic was? You don't know this story. It's a very good story, a very long story. It was the Buddha. So he's come and he's approached the Buddha and he's offered his wife to the Buddha, or his daughter to the Buddha as a wife. His name was Magandhya. He was Magandhya Brahmana. His daughter's name, of course, was also Magandhya. Yeah, so you know this, you know the name, you know the story, some of you. So what happened? He brought his daughter back, he brought his wife and his daughter, said, "I found the man for our daughter." And they get there, and what happened? He's gone. He disappeared, but he left his footprint. And the wife was actually more intelligent than her, more wise than her husband. When she saw it, she said, "That's not the footprint of a man who is going to take our daughter as his wife. That's someone who won't, the five pancha kama guna, he will not be interested in these things." And he said, hush you, this is, I found, don't ruin this." Okay. And so they went and they found the Buddha. They followed the footprint to where the Buddha was sitting. And Magandhya brought his daughter out and said, "Here she is, this is, please accept her as your wife." And the Buddha told a story. He told his story. He told his story of how he had left his wife and son, how he had struggled for 6 long years, and how he had been confronted by Mara with all his armies and the beautiful daughters of Mara. And he said, "Even with the temptation of the three daughters of Mara, I didn't waver. Why would I be at all interested in this carcass full of urine and dung that you offer to me?" And the Brahmin was moved by this story, by the telling and by the Buddha's manner. And when the Buddha taught him and explained the truth to him, he and his wife both became anagami. The daughter, who was being referred to as a carcass full of dung and urine, was less impressed. She felt very insulted. And she actually cultivated a grudge against the Buddha for his words. Now the Brahmins, they left the world as anagamis to live a simple life, and they gave their daughter into the care of an uncle, and the uncle decided that she should be a queen and so offered her to the king. So Samavati and Magandhya, this is how they became queens of King Udena. I think it was King Udena. So this story comes about because of the hatred and the malice of Magandhya, really. Samavati was a pure and innocent person. She actually became Buddhist, right? What happened was she had a slave girl who would bring her flowers. She would give her 8 coins. And the girl would come back with a certain number of flowers. One day she came back with twice as many flowers. And she said, why are you bringing me twice as many flowers? Do you know why? She had been stealing half the money. She said, I've been stealing half your money all this time. And Samavati was taken aback. She said, well then why are you not stealing today? Turns out the florist had invited a Buddha to give for lunch, and so she had this girl, this slave girl, follow her and said, you know, wait and I'll give you the flowers, but first, you know, you've got to wait until I serve the Buddha. And so she listened to the Buddha talk, and when she listened to the Buddha talk, she actually became a Sotapanna. She saw Nibbana for the first time. And as a Sotapanna, of course, she couldn't steal, and she couldn't lie either. So when she came back, she told the truth, awaiting any punishment. But Samavati didn't punish her. Samavati said, can you teach me this truth that you have learned? And this woman, you know the slave girl's name? Kujutara. Kujutara was the Buddha's chief disciple, chief lay disciple who knew the Tipitaka in terms of knowledge of the Buddha's teaching. Slave girl, she was a hunchback as well. But Samavati became a disciple of the Buddha, and that set a grudge between her and Magandhya. Magandhya, of course, was very angry towards the Buddha, and Samavati wanted to see the Buddha when he walked by, so they made these holes in the wall so that they could look and see the Buddha when he walked by for alms. Because they couldn't actually leave the palace. This is the thing about being a queen. A lot of privilege, but kind of like prison. In India, anyway, it was like that. Of course, the Queen of England is not like that. And Magandhya saw these holes and asked about what they were for, and when she heard that Samavati was worshipping the Buddha, she got very angry. She hired some people to revile the Buddha. You know this story, how Ananda came to the Buddha and said, these people are reviling us, they're insulting us. And he couldn't take it. He was very upset because he couldn't take the Buddha being reviled like that. He said, let's go somewhere else. Let's go to another city. And the Buddha said, well, what if we go there and what if they revile us there? What if they say nasty things to us in that city? He said, well, then we'll go to another city. He said, Ananda, this isn't how you solve your problem. By running away. You have to be patient. And so he said, it will only last a short time. It only lasted 7 days. So Magandhya tried so many ways and failed. She tried to have, once she found she couldn't get the Buddha to suffer, she said, well, I'll make Samavati suffer. And she cultivated this hatred towards Samavati. She tried to get the king to be suspicious, and finally she did get the king to be suspicious. She put a poisonous snake in his lute. Lute is like a guitar or some kind of stringed instrument. And then when the king took the flowers out of the hole, the snake came out. And Magandhya said, oh, there's Samavati, put that in there, she's trying to kill you. And the king believed her. And he tried to shoot, he took his royal bow and arrow and he was going to shoot Samavati. And he tried to, but Samavati, what did she do? She looked at the king and she said to all of her attendants, she said, we must now think of this king as ourselves. We wish for ourselves to be happy, let us think of the king, wish for the king to be happy. And so she cultivated metta. And the king wasn't able to shoot her. He shot, it says in the story that he shot at her and the arrow came back to try and hit him and he had to get out of the way. He said, even the arrow knows better. Even this senseless, mindless weapon knows better than to shoot someone like Samavati. And so he begged forgiveness and she told him to beg forgiveness of the Buddha. So Samagandhya was unsuccessful. Until finally she took matters into her own hands. She had her uncle lock Samavati in their, and all of her attendants in their rooms and light their quarters on fire. Burnt them to death. They wrapped rags around the pillars, rags soaked in oil, lit a fire, locked the doors, burnt them all. Even then, Samavati said to her attendants, "We don't know what we've done in the past. We don't know how many times we've been born, how many times we've had to suffer." Because she was very well versed in the Buddha's teaching. She'd been listening to it every day. Once she found out that Kudrutra would come and teach her the Dhamma for some time, but eventually she got Ananda to bring some monks and teach her the Dhamma. So they had been practicing Buddhists for a long time. And so they meditated while they were being burned. Could you imagine if this room were to suddenly light on fire and we were all locked in here? What would you do? Would you run around screaming and crying? Probably that's what we'd do. Magandhya, no. Samavati, no. She and her attendants, they sat and meditated until they passed out and their bodies burnt. Now the king found out and he was distraught because Samavati, of course, was very dear and she was very pure as well. And he thought there can only be one person who would do such a thing, someone who had such hatred towards Samavati. And so when Magandhya was there, he said, "Boy, I'm so glad that that Samavati is gone. When she was here, I was afraid for my life, you know." Because all the times Magandhya had pretended or claimed, tried to trick the king into believing that Samavati was evil. "Well, you know, I'm very glad she's gone," he would say loudly. "Boy, I would like to reward whoever got rid of her for me." Kind of obvious, but Magandhya was, I guess, not very smart, so she fell for it. And she said, "Oh, it was me, sire. I was the one. It was all my doing. I knew you didn't want her around, and I knew it was better if she was gone, so I got rid of her." And he said, "Oh, very good, wonderful. You know, I want to reward you, and I want to reward all of your family as well. Bring all your family out here. I'm going to reward you all." What happened next is probably not worth retelling. He gave them their just desserts. See, kings in ancient India were not very wholesome either. Udayana was not a perfect man. He tortured them, killed them all in very painful and horrific ways. Yes, not very nice. Now the monks were sitting around that talking and they asked each other, "Well, what do you think? Who's alive and who's dead? How do you know whether someone's alive or someone?" And they said, "Between these two people, who would you consider to be alive and who would you consider to be dead?" It sounds kind of odd because for us, we think they're dead. This person has died. But for the monks who had been following the Buddha's teaching, it wasn't like that. They said, "Who could you say? You've got this very, very pure person who was so pure she could make an arrow turn around, you know? Couldn't even be shot with an arrow, she was so pure. And then you have this other person who was so impure that she would destroy, you know, burn people alive." Now they're both dead physically, but who is really dead and who is alive now that they've gone wherever they've gone? And that's why the Buddha told this verse. He said it comes down to one thing. This is what it means to be alive or dead. Do you know what this word means, pamada? Anyone know this word? You should all know this word, right? How do you translate it in Sinhalese? Pamada? In Sinhalese you use the Sanskrit, right? Pramadaya. Pramadaya. But the problem is, I have to say this because I have to explain, pramadaya in Sinhalese is not, it's been corrupted. The word means something different. It means something like procrastinating or you know, being something like that, right? To be late or something. I mean, maybe not. I don't. It's not that important. But it's important maybe to explain exactly what it means. Pamada is in the fifth precept. It's written into the fifth precept. Pamada tana. Tana means sthana, right? A base or a cause in this case. What is the cause for pamada? Surameraya. What is it that alcohol does to you? Alcohol makes you pamada. So that's how you understand what this word means. It means drunk. It means intoxicated. It means negligent. It means heedless. It means you don't have a clue. You don't know what you're doing. You aren't in control of your actions and your speech. You do things like a zombie, you know? So this is a very important word. Where else do we hear this word? Where's the most famous place that we'll find this word pamada? Or appamada, actually. Where did the Buddha say appamada? Appamadena, you know this word? Appamadena sampadeta. Very important words, right? What was this one thing, you know? What did the Buddha choose as his last words? He didn't just on whim decide to say something and then died, right? Absolutely not. So this is not a simple concept. The Buddha said you should become full, sampadeta, you should fulfill, become fulfilled appamadena, with appamada. This is what you should work at. So a means not. So this is the opposite of being drunk, the opposite of being intoxicated, heedless. You don't have to drink alcohol to be drunk, right? Most of us are drunk on many things. We're drunk on sensuality. We're drunk sometimes on anger, right? Someone gets so angry that they just don't know what they're doing. They can't control themselves. They say nasty things, they do. You know, when you're angry and you kick a rock or you kick a table or you kick a door and you hurt yourself. We do things mindlessly, senselessly. That's pamada. Appamada is not that. Appamada is to know, to be conscious. Appamada is the difference between death and life. It's that important. If you don't have appamada, you're not alive. If you have appamada, you are alive. This is the difference. So the Buddha said, appamado amattapadang. Being appamada, not negligent, not heedless, this is the path of immortality, the path of not dying, the path of the deathless. Because the brain, you know, is working on its own. The body also is pumping and doing all this. You don't have to make it happen. All of that is like a robot. If you don't have mindfulness, you know, mindfulness changes your very reality. It changes your path in life. It wakes you up. If any of you have practiced mindfulness meditation, you can vouch for this. That suddenly you see what's in your mind. You see your habits, you see your addictions and your aversions. So this is what it means, you know, this is what is important in Buddhism. When we talk about death, what is the most important point? It's our own minds. Right now, what's going on in your mind? Are you dead or alive? Well, the Buddha he didn't leave it at just one word. He explained this word, appamada. We have a good explanation in the Anguttara Nikaya, I think, Book of Fours. He said, abhyapano sadasato ajhatang susamahito abhijja vinayesikam appamado ti ujjati. This is what it means, appamada, these things. Four things, actually. Abhyapano, to not have viyapada, to not have ill will, to not be angry or irritable. Sada sato, sada means always. Sato means sati, with mindfulness, to be one who has mindfulness always. Ajatang susamahito, ajatang means inside. Susamahito is tranquil. To be tranquil inside, not outside. You know, all of us sitting here, everyone looks very tranquil, but inside, how tranquil are you, is the question. How composed is the mind? And number four, abhijja vinaye sikhang. Sikhang means training, right? Sikha. Abhijja is desire. Vinaye means to go out. So training to go out of desire. These are the four things that it means. This is very important. You want to know what is the core of Buddhism? What does it mean to be appamada? How do you live? How do you wake up from the slumber that we're all in? Four things. Ambiyapano. Don't have ill will. Don't be like Magandhya. Right? Magandhya was dead. Dead before she took her last breath. She was dead because of her hatred. She couldn't see past it. She was blinded by it, we say. The hatred that she had for Samavati, the hatred she had for the Buddha. Imagine, you know, if you hate the Buddha, you're dead. You cannot live. You're dead in terms of Buddhism. You're just a foam on the sea of samsara, something like that. Very dangerous. So we can't afford to hold on to our grudges. We should not hold ill will towards people. This is important. This is something you can do away with. You can say, look, yes, maybe this person has done things that are wrong and that I don't like. But for my own benefit, you know, for my own health and well-being, for my own mindfulness, that I may live, I must not let this consume me. That's number one. Number two, sada sato. Sada sato, always mindful. Mindfulness is sati, is the one thing the Buddha said is always useful. You know the satta bojanga, the seven bojangas. The bojangas you should not always develop, you know. If you're very energetic, then you should develop the samadhi and piti and upeka. You know. But if you're tired and kind of slothful or lazy, then you should cultivate dhammavicaya, viriya. Piti is on that side. Piti makes you excited, right? But you should practice pasadi, samadhi, upeka. But those ones only sometimes, and many other things. Saddha you can't just cultivate. No, faith. You want to just have faith in the Buddha? It's not enough. It's dangerous, actually. If you have too much faith but no wisdom, you'll just do what you want. You won't have any guiding force. If you have lots of wisdom but you don't have any faith, then you're always doubting yourself. All the things you've heard in the Buddha's teaching, well, if you don't have any faith, you also can't go. Effort, concentration. If you just have lots of effort, you can't sit still, right? Some of you children may be sitting here. When do we go? Right. Too much energy, right? You need to cultivate concentration as well. But if you have too much concentration, you'll fall asleep. So you need to balance them. All of these you have to balance. So you have to measure them. There's only one quality that the Buddha said. He said, Satincho kuhang bhikkave sabbati kang vadami. Sati is always useful. The more the better. He said, he even said it's equivalent. He said, satya vipavasa apamadoti ujjati. When you're never without sati, this is what it means to be apamadaya. You want to know what does it mean? Sada sattu, always mindful. Mindful in the good times, mindful in the bad times. If this room were to burn down, think of samavati, being mindful, even in that. Even in that. Surely, if she could do that, surely we can be mindful in our lives. In the time of the Buddha, people would go around asking each other, which satipatthana are you practicing today? Are you practicing kaya nupassana satipatthana, vedana, citta, dhamma? And if they said, well, today I was practicing kaya, or today I was practicing vedana, I'd say, oh, good for you. You haven't wasted this birth as a human being. This birth in the time of the Buddha. But if they said, no, today I didn't practice any of the satipatthanas, and they would shake their head and say, even though born living, you are acting as though dead. They would say this, you see. So they knew this teaching. Mindfulness is what makes you alive. Apramadaya. Number three is you have to be focused. You have to be level-headed, not disturbed, right? Like thinking of samavati, how focused she would be. Imagine he's pulling an arrow at her and she sits and sends metta to him. And then when they were burnt, of course, it's not just mindfulness. You need to be composed. So this is how we, these are the qualities that we focus on as Buddhists. Mindfulness and focus. Level-headed, being equanimous and mindful. And the fourth quality, the fourth practice that we need to accomplish in order to be alive, in order to live, it's not a simple thing, and so that's why it's translated differently. You see, with anger, it seems that the Buddha was saying, just don't be angry at people, just don't hate them. But with greed, the Buddha said, abhijja vinaye sikhaṃ, you have to train to get out of it. Because our desires, you know, this is why we're born. We're born because of desire. Which makes it funny to celebrate your birthday, because it's basically saying, congratulations, you didn't make it out of samsara once again. It's like celebrating our failure. Celebrating our attachments, which is not very good. I'm just joking. That doesn't have to be. Actually, birthdays can be a good reason to do good deeds. Here in the West, you give gifts to someone whose birthday it is, right? Well, I don't know about Sri Lanka, but I don't think, but in Thailand, on your birthday, it was a time to give, you say. Oh, I've lost another year. I'm one year closer to death. I better hurry up and do good deeds. Kind of morbid, I suppose. We look at things more, we're very optimistic here in the West, right? We don't want to think about death. Whereas as Buddhists, we think a lot about death. There was the story, you know, in the Uraga Jataka, this very good Jataka about a man who teaches his family about death, and he has the whole family remembering death daily, thinking about it daily. And so in the West, we would look at that and we would say, what a horrible thing to teach your children, right? But he did. He taught his wife and his children and his whole family. And his son died. His son was bitten by a snake, hence the name of the Jataka. Uraga means snake. And they didn't cry. They didn't weep. They didn't mourn. He saw his son bitten by the snake and knew he was dead immediately, a very poisonous snake. He called for his wife to come, but he told a neighbor who was passing by, because they were out working in the field, right? He said to the neighbor, go and tell my wife to bring lunch for only one person today, and tell her to bring her best clothes, and to bring our daughter and our son's wife, you know, and the servants. Bring everybody in the house, basically. And the wife heard this instruction, and she knew right away, my son's dead. And so she gathered up all their good things and gathered everyone together and put on good, nice clothes and came out to the field, and the husband had been making a funeral pyre. And so they all stood around and then they lit it on fire and they stood there watching it burn. Not one of them crying, not one of them even sad. So much so that up in heaven, Indra, Sakha, on his throne, you think this is a nice chair. Sakha's chair was magnificent, huge, bigger than Toronto, I think. Just a huge throne. And it shook, or it got warm or something, because this is what would happen, right? And so he looked down and he saw these people and he said, I've got to go investigate. And so he transformed himself into a Brahmin and he walked up and he said, who is this you're burning? An enemy, I guess. Some sort of villain. And the father said, no. This is our son. I'm burning my son. And the Brahmin said, well, what, was he a terrible person? Was he evil? Was he wicked? Did he not listen to you? Why aren't you crying? Why aren't you upset? And the Bodhisattva, right? the man was the Bodhisattva. He said, when he came into this world, I didn't invite him. When he left, he didn't ask permission to go. He said, what good is crying? This is the way of life. If you cry, can you bring the moon down from the sky? And then he asked the wife, he said, the mother, he said, he must have been awful to you. He said, no, he was a wonderful boy. Why aren't you crying? You're, as a woman, your heart must be tender. I mean, men can be hard, but women are soft. And she said the same thing. She said, if, you know, this adage, never cry over spilt milk. Well, that's basically what she said. She said, you know, when you break a bottle of milk and then you cry, does that bring it back? It's broken. It's gone. It's moved on. The milk has become something else. And he asked all the family, and none of them were upset. What good does it do? They said. He came on his own. He left on his own. You come alone, you go alone. We all die alone. When we die, we go on our own. You can't depend on anyone. There's no one there to guide you when you die. You're all on your own. This is very scary, you know? Because in all of our lives' choices, we have friends and family and so many things to protect us. Here in Canada, you even have government protecting you, right? Health care, social security, all sorts of things. And so we become complacent and we aren't self-reliant. What is the one thing that can protect you? Appamada. It's the only thing that you can take with you. Because when you die, what follows you? Does your family follow you? Do your parents follow you? Do your children follow you? Do your toys follow you? Does your iPad follow you? No. None of it goes with you. There's only two things that go with you. Your good and your evil. You get to take them both. You can't choose. You can't choose just to take the good. Everything in your mind that is good and evil, you take with you. And when you're faced with that, when your life flashes before your eyes when you die, what are you going to choose? What are you going to cling to? What is going to affect you? Is it the good or the evil? This is why we cultivate meditation. This is why we train ourselves. Abhijja vinaye sikhang. We train ourselves not to cling, to leave behind clinging, because when you die, you will cling. You ever hear someone who had a near-death experience, they will say, my whole life flashed before my eyes. Well, it's not true. But all of the things that you cling to will flash before your eyes, will come before you. And that's what happens when you die. When you actually die, this all will come to you. Good things you've done, bad things you've done. Sometimes what you cling to, it's like playing Russian, it's like playing roulette. You don't know where it's going to land. If you're not mindful, you might grab the wrong thing. Oh, that looks nice. You know, there's this story of this, just one very short story and then I'm done, about this man who, very long jataka. He was, he died, I think, and he came upon this island, and anyway, it's kind of a weird sort of story, but he came upon this island and he saw these crowns with jewels on their, it was like a death image, you know, when you die you see these images, bright lights, and they look attractive, and he saw these people with crowns on their head and all brightly red color, ruby colored jewels. And he said, oh, please give me one of those crowns, I want to wear that. And they said, no, you don't want this. And he said, yes, yes, I do. And so he took this on, and this was kind of like I don't know that he was dead or not, but this is the kind of thing that happens when you die. He saw this and he clung to it. It turned out these were spinning razor blades, and the red was their blood of their, this was hell. He had found a doorway to hell. And so when he put this on, it was razor blades cutting into his skull. Sorry, don't mean to be morbid, but this is what we can expect. We get caught up. You think you'll be able to tell the difference? If you're not mindful, you'll see the brightly colored jewels. You'll see the bright lights. Bright lights turn out to be the light of a fire, right? Who knows? So, on this day, we commemorate this part of life that is known as death, but it's a conceptual death. We come together to commemorate. The truth is that person, all of your, this person who you all know, who died untimely, has already been born again. If they're born as a human, they're in someone's womb somewhere. They're more concerned about building up a new human body. This fetus is forming and developing in the womb. If they were born in heaven, I calculated 3 months. In your average heaven, I think it differs, but if you go by one of the stories, 2.3 seconds have passed in the past 3 months. I mean, it might be off there. But what that means is they've been awake in their new life for 2.3 seconds. Which means that by the time they get their bearings, by the time they look around and figure out what happened to them, you know, and get acquainted with their new life and maybe spend a day or two, you know, getting settled in, and then think about all of us. We'll all be dead. Don't know how pleasing this is to hear. But you know this story of this woman. I won't go into more stories because it's already been over an hour, but this woman, she was born 67 years she spent on earth, and then she went back up to heaven. Only a morning had passed. Her whole lifetime was a morning up in heaven. So, this is a time for us to reflect and to wish this person well on their way, but to focus our minds as well on the right and on living with life, not forcing it or lamenting what hasn't been, not holding on to the past, not living in the future, being present at right now, here and now. This is what is real, and this is where we live, this is life. Death is a part of that. So that's just a little bit of Dhamma about death and life, and I think somewhat apropos for today's occasion. That's all I have to talk about. Thank you all for being patient and again for inviting me, for allowing me to talk.
Yeah, this is the name.
Ah, yes, right. So, this was her name. This isn't her name anymore. I don't know what her name is now. So, the person formerly known as Mrs. Dilini Makavita, wherever they are now, If they are in happiness, may they continue in happiness. If they are in suffering, may they be free from suffering. All beings that are in sorrow and sadness, may they be free from it. All beings that are happy, may they cultivate greater happiness and greater goodness. May we all cultivate goodness and clarity and mindfulness, appamada. May we develop the path of the deathless and truly live. Thank you.